So, oh, I don't know if this is yet, Teresa. How's it going? Everybody enjoy your first week? How many of you have a Schmitz's class in trade? So you've seen my other book now, too.
Yeah.
Actually, there are four of them. This is the website that I teach from. I also use Canvas, but the website's more flexible. I will try to record today, but I walk, so I'll add a little mic thingy and put it in my pocket so that hopefully, because as I walk away from the podium, my voice gets weaker. It's not required. Well, I would like you to listen to or watch a set of YouTubes. This YouTube, I will post it, is The Ascent of Money. And it's kind of an interesting one. Has anybody seen the YouTube series, The Ascent of Money? Really an interesting series. We'll do this, and then we'll go to a series called The Commanding Heights. Both of them are more or less about capital markets. Okay? So here it is. There's the YouTube link. I will post the next one next week, so about one a week. Yesterday, I need to talk on Monday about covariance and variance. We'll make more use of this material as we go to the into the risk section, but we need to talk about covariance and variance when we talk about bank portfolios. So this is posted on, right now it's just on the Canvas. But you need to either go to Canvas, it'll be posted on my webpage tonight, and the data set. So it's a step-by-step mechanism on how you compute a covariance matrix. How many of you have computed covariance before? Yeah, they told me you compute variance, but you don't compute covariance. So I want you to compute covariance. The idea about a covariance matrix, I have two random variables, two normals. I have loan one and I have loan two. Under most cases, you would think there's some probability that both loan one and loan two will yield a higher than average rate of return at the same time. That's what's captured by the covariance relationship and the correlation relationship. But this becomes important when we talk about banks. And so there's a little example. There's a data set. You need to compute the covariance and correlation from the data set. There will be an assignment then on Tuesday morning. It will be posted. It will be due in 1 week at 5 o'clock, uploaded to Canvas. Okay? Yes. I looked at trying to do a seating chart for this room. I think it will prove impractical. So I've decided to do simple lecture quizzes, basically an attendance quiz. Are you here? Guess. And then I know you were here. Okay, and we will do that between the two lectures on Thursday and at the end of the lecture on Tuesday. Okay? So,
Professor, I had a quick question off topic. Did that paper, PDF you just put up,
yes. Everything I do is in LaTeX. Absolutely everything.
Okay.
Because it's easy to go from my lecture notes to books in LaTeX. So that's I teach a course 3 or 4 years, and then I take all my notes, and it's a textbook. So a little more work, but then you have it. How many of you guys have the book? I would really recommend the book. If you have the book, either I will say it in class, it will be on the overhead, or it will be in the book. They're all three the same, but one of them's going to hit. Okay, that's my idea. So the first lecture is kind of ground rule lecture. Okay, usually when you start a class, one of the things that at least I started asking after a while is, what's this class really about? So I thought we'd take some time out today and talk about that in the first section. Agricultural finance. Now, Say, I know it's agricultural, advanced agricultural business management, but it's largely a finance course. At least that's the way I'm approaching it. So we know it mystifies. I had a ride one time with one of our administrators above the vice president who would ask, you know, why does the University of Florida have two econ departments? One over in the College of Business at that time, it's become part of the College of Arts and Sciences, and one in agriculture. And why do we offer two sets of finance courses, one in the School of Finance and one here? I've actually taught the PhD course, the first PhD finance course before. It's not that different in general. But I need to go through economics, finance, and this idea about agriculture. How many of you have heard the name Gary Becker? No? You need a Nobel laureate set of trading cards in you know, if you're going to major in any economics. Gary Becker was a Nobel laureate at the University of Chicago. And Becker was famous for basically asking economic questions that nobody else thought were economic, okay? And he asked such questions as, why do people have families? You know, what's the differences in fertility rates? And on his memo, you know, one that I thought was really strange is, what's the economics of suicide? Okay, and this one, it was in a paper, and I actually emailed him, can I reference this paper? So I have an email from Becker that says, yeah, go ahead. Okay, it's probably about as close to a Nobel Prize as I'll ever come. So you know, there's a wide range of topics here, but the idea is economists deal in theory, and ag econ tend to be a lot more applied. We actually take it out of the theory and say, empirically, does this make sense? Empirically, does this answer a question we want to answer? So that's been our change over time. Also, agricultural economics has been a lot more classically tied to ag policy. And I will tell you, going back to the Nobel Prize trading cards, have you ever heard this? There has been one ag economist win the Nobel Prize in economics. His name was Theodore Schultz, passed some years ago. Becker's passed too. But basically, what he was famous for was asking how agriculture fits inside the general economy. He wrote right after World War II. Okay. Now, when you've had your econ courses, do they, you know, is it sterile? I mean, you know what I'm saying. Nobody actually does anything. You derive a demand curve, you derive a supply curve. But nobody actually does anything. I from time to time, am a big fan of the Austrian economist. Has anybody heard of the Austrian economist? The Austrian economist, there's one, von Mises. He defined economics as praxeology, which was the study of human action. So he was really interested in why people do something, more than can I derive a utility function. So we will do some work with the utility function. The other thing that's strong is, did you ever notice in most of your econ courses, there really wasn't time? Things kind of happened instantaneously. There were production functions, there was demand. There was no time. Okay, now basically all production functions take time. Some of them take more time, some of them take less time. The book I talk about, the old automobile manufacturing, steel manufacturing that used to happen around Lake Michigan, where they brought the iron ore across from Minnesota and the coal up from the coal mines, and they created these inventories. And so all production functions to some extent have time. The other thing that they, in agriculture, time is really important. You know, how long does an orange tree live? Anybody know? Anybody into citrus? Huh? basically they have no upper limit. If the tree is well cared for and doesn't get a disease, it could last basically forever. Okay. Since greening is struck, we think that the lifespan of a citrus tree is a little narrower, but it's a question. So one of the things we have to talk about is time. And so between these two things, between the idea that we need somebody acting and that time is important, these are two of the ideas that really drive finance. And you will read it in the book. There's some idea, which is strange, that plants and equipment really don't exist as an independent source of production. So you can read the stuff that the Austrians have written. Okay, so what happens is that this gives rise to the need of ownership. So in a timeless world, I could buy the inputs this morning, sell them this afternoon. Ownership really wouldn't be important. But when I have this time lapse, so I have to buy the inputs, put them into production, the feed, the seed, the fertilizer, and then I have this multi-period production process, and then I have something to sell, this means that I have to acquire ownership of these resources for some time period. Now, undoubtedly, I don't know, this is probably unlike any other finance course you've ever had as to want to discuss this. Okay, it's very important. So the need to acquire ownership leads to a market for equity. Okay, and two major forms of equity is debt equity and ownership equity. And that's largely the field of finance. So what's the difference? How many of you have had a corporate finance course? Finance 3408, isn't it? Okay. There's a difference between corporate finance and ag finance. A lot of the terms are the same, but we have differences and we have changes, okay? In corporate finance raises something we call an agency problem. Has anyone heard of an agency problem? What's an agency problem?
No, you got it. You raised your hand. I didn't see that.
Okay.
I say it's a confliction between inside a firm, between power and the board of directors and shareholders.
That's the classic agency problem within a corporation. So you have an owner, you have the stockholders, you have a board of directors, and then you have the management of the firm. But an agency is created any time that I give you control of my asset. Right? So an agency is actually created when you take your car to be repaired and you have to leave it at a garage. An agency has been established, right? Because I am giving you control of my asset. Now, the biggest problem with agency is typically the incentives of the agent are different than the incentives of the owner. Does that make sense? So if we go back to the corporate finance case, the incentive or the objective function of the stockholders is different than the objective function of the CEO, right? What's the objective function of the stockholders? I want to maximize return to my capital. What's the objective function of the CEO? The stock prices is of the stock owners. It's not the objective function of the CEO. What's the objective function of the CEO?
Maximize profits.
Yeah, I want me, right? I want to maximize my income. Okay, now, so how do they handle this? In a corporation, typically you structure it to where the CEO is paid based on something, right? Paid based on profit. What's another way a lot of CEOs operate?
They get stock options.
Great, I wanted that. What's a stock option?
Where part of your pay is given in dividends.
Well, actually, you have the right, but not the obligation, to purchase stock at some time in the future, right? So if you do well and the stock and the market price of the shares go up, then what? You exercise the options, sell the stock, and make money. Okay, what's the great deal about giving the CEO options? It makes them the same interest as the stockholders. It also does what? It's cheap. Right? It doesn't really cost the corporation anything. Okay. Who does it cost? It costs the shareholders a little bit if the stock price goes up, right? Because he's going to exercise his options and you're going to wind up with more stock, which is going to decrease the value of the stock in the market. Okay. Now, these are corporate finance ideas. In agricultural finance and in agribusiness finance, we're not working in that kind of a world. Why? Most small agribusinesses and almost all farms are organized as what? They're organized as sole proprietors. Okay? This is different. So, if I'm organized as a sole proprietor, and we will get to this eventually, why are most farms organized as sole proprietorships? It ends up, it's the agency problem. It's the agency problem. It means we can't organize these farms as a sole proprietor, or as a corporation. It doesn't work. Okay? So, instead of dealing with things like buying and selling stock and bonds, how does the farm raise capital?
Buying and selling plants.
Well, part of that's profit. There's retained earnings, which gives you profit, which gives you equity. But what's the other source? Debt. So debt is different, and we talk about debt, and debt is very important. Okay? Is debt an agency? Yeah, actually, debt's an agency. Because the bank has given the farm money, capital, right? It is an agency. But it's an agency with a different contract. Okay, it's an agency with a different contract. So that's important. Okay. Where am I? Okay. Now, briefly, I want to talk about this general field of finance and where you're at and where I'm at. There is a slight distinction between financial management and financial economics. Financial management is basically looking at the decisions that a farm or an agribusiness will make. Okay? Financial economics looks at the world and what's happening in the market for stocks, what's happening in the market for bonds, what's happening in the debt market, what's happening in asset markets. Okay? Now, so it's not a 1-0 idea, there's a continuum. So this class will probably be a little more right in the middle than a lot of times this class is offered. That's just the way I roll. I hate that term. When did that happen? It's the way I roll. What does that mean? I don't know, right? I'm afraid you probably don't even know. I'm a big Willie and Waylon and alternative country fan. So I don't know what it means. That's the way I, anyway. Okay. So the idea when we're looking at the firm, and this, everything will come back around to this on occasion. You know, no one heard this. There used to be this old chiffon commercial. It was a margarine, and the punchline is, "It's not nice to fool Mother Nature," right? No matter what we do, there are certain identities of the firm we cannot change, and one of them is the accounting identity. Assets equals equity plus liabilities. This is just the fundamental equation. Every time we do something, we think, oh, we got it away from it, and it'll reach up and smack us again. I mean, it's just fact of life. So I'm talking about debt level. Okay? So one of the ideas we could look at financial management is, how does the firm choose its debt level? Okay? Now, the other way is we could look at this in financial economics terms. How does a firm choose its debt level? There's a theorem out there that says, Modigliani-Miller, which says that the valuation of a firm is independent of its debt, of its debt-to-equity combination. We won't get that. We will talk about it. It has implications. So from a management perspective, what questions we ask is, should a farmer or a firm buy an additional piece of machinery? If they buy an additional piece of machinery, the idea is that purchasing the additional piece of machinery raises the value of the firm in some way. Can you tell me how it raises the value of the firm? So obviously, if a farmer in agribusiness buys a piece of machinery, what they're saying is the increase in the value of the firm resulting from that purchase does what? Has to be greater than or equal to the price of the machine. Okay? Now, given the idea that they bought this firm, okay, one of the ideas then was to be, how do we buy or how do we finance this? Variety of questions. One is, I could just simply go out and borrow it. If I want to buy a tractor, anyone know what a Cat 850 is? Yeah. Have you seen a Cat 850? Oh, what's a Cat 850 cost? $450,000? Okay. So I'm going to buy a Cat 850. Anyone know what I'm talking about, a Cat 850? It's a big tractor. Okay. So I'm going to buy a Cat 850. Okay. Who's going to lend me the money for a Cat 850? Well, one of the people that may lend me the money is who? Caterpillar. Because what? They want to sell the tractor. Okay. I could go to a bank. Okay. Now, suppose that Cat is going to give me the money for this thing. Anyone heard of a lease purchase decision? There's two ways I can acquire that Cat. One is to lease it over a time period, and one is to buy the mortgage, put my name on the dotted line, and borrow the money and buy the Cat outright. Okay, these have implications. Now, one question we have is, what's the real difference between a lease and a purchase? Okay, and it ends up there may not be much of a difference. Okay, so the financial economics, the financial market, typically the individual decision gets lost. Okay, so when I have my financial economics hat on, I'm interested in what's happening to agricultural debt as a whole. What's happening across all farmers? Why does it behave the way it does? Okay. One of the things is, what changes farmland values? Okay, and I was thinking about this. I'm going to make several references throughout the semester on two meltdowns. Anybody know what I mean when I say a financial market meltdown? Part of it? Okay, my professional career has been basically phrased within two market meltdowns. One was called the Farm Financial Crisis of 1985. The other is what we typically refer to as the Mortgage Crisis of 2008. Okay, anybody here know anything about the Mortgage Crisis of 2008? What do you know?
It was based off of subprime mortgages, and then eliminating the risk from those subprime mortgages defaulting, some companies would package them as investments.
Yeah.
And then they were run rated as, you know, higher grade
than they actually were, and when they started to default. So what we talk about here is a pooling risk. Okay. So for years and years, when banks operated, they made mortgages and they held the mortgage. So I don't know, take a local bank. Are there any local banks left? I don't actually know if there's a local
Campus
bank.
Campus USA's.
Well, close. Okay. So Campus USA writes and puts out the loan. and they hold that loan for 15 years, 20 years until its maturity, and you pay them back, and it doesn't go any farther than Campus USA, the mortgage instrument craze, and it was somewhat of a craze, said that instead of Campus USA holding all of your note, they would sell it to a pool. And the pooler would retain a share of the mortgage-backed the mortgages. And then they would chop the rest of it in something called a mortgage-backed instrument. And the mortgage-backed instrument was implicitly guaranteed by Fannie Mae, Ginny Mae, one of the associations. So the mortgage, the people that holding the pooling held 15%, the rest of it went into the pool, cut up into these mortgage-backed instruments and put back out again. These mortgage-backed instruments were candy, right? Every investor wanted to buy mortgage-backed instruments. Why? Well, it basically had a guarantee on it. So what happened in 2008 is we finally pushed the bubble too far, and some of the pools exceeded their 15% risk, and the system started to collapse rapidly. Okay? We're going to talk more about this as we go through the semester, basically when we talk about banking. And I really want to talk quite a bit about banking, money and banking, here for a couple of weeks. Okay. Questions? Comments? What do you think? All this left's old hat? You've all had it before? No? Okay. Definitely be a different viewpoint of it. Okay, like I said, I see no reason to go all on if we've kind of finished that section. So I'm going to put the attendance quiz. I don't know, let's put it down here. Everybody answer the attendance quiz, sign your name, and we'll start again in about 10 minutes.